Live from Memphis, Tennessee, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, I am indeed Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome again today here on CBS Sports Radio. And I'm coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. If you don't know me, I'm a columnist, a television analyst for CBS Sports, also a radio host. Evidence being that I'm sitting in this chair right now hosting a radio show. I was here yesterday, back today, got a fun 3 hours planned for you. Let me walk you through it real quickly. CBS Sports' Kyle Porter is going to join me a little later on this hour, live from Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. That's where the PGA Championship is being played. Tiger Woods shot an even par 70 yesterday. I'm sure you heard. He tees off today, not until 2:48 p.m. Eastern. So Kyle Porter will get us up to date from Belle Reve. He's going to do that around 12:40 Eastern. College Football News, Pete Futak is going to join me just after that, right around 1 o'clock Eastern. Then I'll have the athletic Stuart Mandel at 1:40 Eastern, talk college football with him. Then Jason Cole going to be here at 2 Eastern, talk NFL with him. And that's where I want to start today, with the NFL, because we had a big slate of exhibitions last night. There were 12 games total all over television. Who won and who lost? Largely unimportant, but there were still interesting storylines, significant returns from injuries, and fun rookie debuts. Yes, some players did take knees during the anthem, and yes, the President of the United States woke up this morning and popped off about it again via Twitter, so that wheel continues to spin, and the owners, they're going to have to make a decision at some point, either ignore him or clap back at him. Catering to him is not going to work. They tried that already. It backfired spectacularly. And if they go as far, this seems pretty clear, as the president wants them to go, then they're going to end up losing their players, and it's going to be an even bigger mess than it already is. So the NFL owners, they're going to have to ignore him or clap back. Those are the only options at this point. We'll probably get into that a little more later on in the show. Kelvin Benjamin, a big viral moment last night, trashed Cam Newton earlier in the week. So Cam Newton confronted him pregame. Benjamin walked away like a coward, but it still made for a fun video. And put me down as somebody who respects Cam for how he handled that and lost a little respect for Benjamin, how he handled that. Listen, if you can say whatever you want to say about anybody publicly the way he did, but you know, then you got to be able to stand there and if confronted, like, address it. And to just sort of be dismissive of Cam, walk away from him, also not even shake his hand, like, I got no respect for somebody who wants to pop off like that. And if you didn't get the comments, essentially said he would have been a much better player in Carolina if he would have had a quarterback like Big Ben or Aaron Rodgers or even Eli Manning, you know, somebody who can actually throw the ball to his receivers. Cam naturally and predictably took offense to that. And rather than, you know, go back through the media or tweet something ridiculous, he just walked the way you're supposed to. Walked right up to him, put his hand out. Hey, let's talk about this. And Benjamin wanted none of it, which it was a bad look. It made for a nice video, but Cam Newton, I think, comes away from that looking way better than Kelvin Benjamin did. Meantime, Andrew Luck played for the first time in like 178 years, threw 9 passes, completed 6 of them, 64 passing yards total, no touchdowns, no picks, and Deshaun Watson also back from injury. But just briefly, he only threw 1 pass, played 1 series. He completed that pass for 4 yards, just not much there. But it was nice to see the former Clemson star back on the field. Beyond all that stuff, the rookies were probably the story. Saquon Barkley got 39 yards on his first NFL touch. Not a whole lot after that, but that first carry was enough to get Giants fans excited. And Seattle rookie Shaquem Griffin, you know, had a team-high 9 tackles against the Colts. He had 4 tackles on the first 4 snaps that he played. Just an awesome performance. And also a reminder that anybody still wondering, like, how he's going to do without a hand in the NFL, obviously didn't pay enough attention to how he did without a hand in college. Like my friend Dan Walken from USA Today pointed out on Twitter this morning, you know, some skeptics acted like Shaquem Griffin lost his hand on spring break earlier this year, like he'd have to learn how to play without a left hand, when the truth is actually this. He's never had a left hand, and he's never not been awesome at football. So the idea that he continues to be impressive with only one hand, just like he's always been, shouldn't be too surprising. Again, 9 tackles last night for Shaquem Griffin, awesome performance. And that would probably be the big takeaway from the night. if Baker Mayfield wasn't the big takeaway from the night. The former Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick, 2018 NFL Draft. He took over for Tyrod Taylor on the Browns' third series. He played all the way into the fourth quarter, finished 11 of 20 for 212 yards, two touchdowns. He had a passer rating of 125.4. He had 13 yards on the ground. Simply put, he looked the part. Composed, confident. He stepped up in the pocket when he needed to step up in the pocket. He made something out of nothing when he needed to make something out of nothing. He made the decisions NFL quarterbacks have to make. He made the throws NFL quarterbacks are asked to make, all while providing hope for a franchise that, as far as anybody can remember, has been mostly hopeless. And more than anything, I think that's the encouraging thing for Cleveland fans last night. The rookie, number one pick, playing the most important position in all of sports, did enough to provide hope, which is so important when it comes to sports. And listen, everybody knows the Browns aren't going to be good this season. They lost every game last season. I don't think that'll happen again. I don't think. They'll win some, I guess. But they probably won't win much. They probably won't even be respectable. And that's just misery for a fan base to know that before a season even starts. But it's one thing to be bad without any reason to think good is on the way. That's where the Browns were, say, this time last year. It's quite another thing to be bad, but bad while having a reason to believe you might have tapped into something. And as of this morning, and I know it's only after one exhibition, I know. But as of this morning, I think it's reasonable to suggest the Browns might have gotten this right. It looks that way, at least. Baker Mayfield looked the part last night. Josh Allen, not quite as much, but Baker Mayfield looked the part. And that's not an opinion unique to me. Chris Carter was on television this morning singing his praises. Do a Twitter search on his name. It's almost all good stuff. Tyrod Taylor is going to be Cleveland's starter, at least to start this season. But it's totally reasonable to believe that this franchise that's needed a quarterback forever has found its quarterback of the future. What Baker Mayfield did last night created real hope. And hope is an incredible feeling. Hopelessness, that's the worst. Hope might really be the best. I've talked about this for a while, mostly as it relates to college athletics, but it applies really to any sport or anything in life. But let's just stick to sports. Take college football, for instance, or college basketball. The best thing you can have in those sports is an awesome on-the-field or on-the-court product, like Alabama in football or Clemson in football or Georgia in football or Villanova in basketball or Duke in basketball or Gonzaga in basketball. But the next best thing you can have, if you don't have an awesome on-the-field or on-the-court product, is hope. And in college athletics, great recruiting classes double as hope. The LSU basketball last year, a pretty good example of this. They weren't good. You know, first year head coach, Will Wade, inherited a mess, takes it over, scrambled together a pretty good recruiting class, but not the type that you're going to be able to win in the SEC with immediately. So they weren't very good. But he went out last November and signed a top five recruiting class in America. Hope. That provided hope. So while LSU fans were struggling through the SEC schedule, you could always circle back to, but just wait. Because we've got hope now. Good things are on the way. And now LSU is going to be a preseason top 25 team, and they should be back in the NCAA tournament. The hope gets you through the bad times. Bad times with no hope? That's misery. But bad times when you have hope, that's the type of stuff that can get you through it. This time last year, I think the Browns were preparing to go through bad times with little hope. Right now, it looks like the Browns are getting ready to, probably go through some bad times. Maybe not as bad as last season, but bad times still. I don't think you're going to watch them on Wild Card Weekend. But they got something to believe in. They got some hope. They've got something. And that something is Baker Mayfield, what we saw last night. They got something that gives them a reasonable reason to believe, you know what? We might finally break out of this thing. We might really get out of this thing. In your own life, and you might not buy these, but it serves the same purpose in a slightly different way, lottery tickets. You know why people buy lottery tickets? Because maybe just for a couple days, a few hours, it provides hope. Now, it's completely unrealistic hope, but it provides hope. Like, what you get to just think, even if your day's miserable, your job's miserable, you'll catch yourself daydreaming just a couple of minutes. Man, what if this thing hit? It's going to hit for somebody. What if it hit for me? And then, of course, the numbers come out and you didn't match anything and you throw it in the garbage and then you do it all over again. But that feeling of hope is a real and powerful thing. Hopelessness, the worst. Hope, the best. And the Cleveland Browns, with what Baker Mayfield did last night, I think they found something that provides hope. Let's talk about it. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. Did you see the same things I saw in Baker Mayfield last night? Did you see hope? And what was your favorite NFL thing from last night? Was it Saquon Barkley's first touch? Andrew Luck's return? Cam Newton punking Kelvin Benjamin? Antonio Callaway just 4 days removed from a marijuana arrest? Catching a touchdown pass from Baker Mayfield? Shaquem Griffin getting nine tackles? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. I'll take your calls after this break. Then CBS Sports' Kyle Porter, he's going to join me around 1240 Eastern, live from Belrive Country Club. Get us ready for Tigers' second round. My name is Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
I'm Gary Parrish, columnist and television analyst for CBS Sports, filling in for Jim Rome again today. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio. You can reach me on Twitter at Gary Parrish CBS. That's at Gary Parrish CBS. You can reach me by phone at 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. CBS Sports' Kyle Porter going to join me in the next segment. He'll get us ready live from Belrive Country Club for Tiger Woods' second round. But right now we're talking NFL. What's the story from last night? Saquon Barkley's first touch, Andrew Luck's return, Cam Newton punking Kelvin Benjamin, Shaquem Griffin getting nine tackles, or was it the anthem protest that sparked another tweet storm from the President of the United States this morning? Again, the number is 855-212-4227. Let's start with Teddy in Ohio. Teddy, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Everything's good, my word. I appreciate you calling.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I was watching last night. Really encouraged from what I'm seeing from the whole organization, from the bottom to the ground up. I mean, Baker was really impressive last night. Gives us a hope that we probably haven't had in the last 20 years. So, I mean, I don't think we should turn the reins over to him right away. You got to stick with Tyrod. What he's done has been super impressive. I mean, you know, getting the guys together in the off season and just building that continuity is something that, you know, we haven't had in Cleveland in a long time. And, yeah, you know, sky's the limit for what we're doing. I'm real excited.
You should be. And I think it's been a good week for Browns fans, not just because of what you saw last night, but what you saw on Hard Knocks in the first episode of this season. Like, there was a lot of encouraging stuff there. Like, it looked like something other than what you might expect from the Cleveland Browns. Like, everybody talking about changing a culture, and then you watch an exhibition last night, and the guy you picked first, like, looked the part. That's the thing. It's not just that he played well. It's that he looked the part. He looked comfortable and composed and confident, and all of those things are hugely important. And it couldn't come at a better time for Cleveland, because I don't think I got to tell you guys, they just lost the greatest basketball player in the world. So you combine that with if Baker Mayfield didn't look the part, you'd really start to – the hopelessness stuff would set in. But with what you had last night, I think that provides real hope. If I were a Cleveland Browns fan today, I'd be optimistic, like Teddy said, for the first time in maybe 20 years. Let's go to Ken down in St. Augustine, Florida. Ken, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Everything's good. I appreciate you calling.
Yeah, all right. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you perfectly.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the kneeling controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my opinion is I think kneeling is by far more American than bitching about it. And I really have a problem with the president tweeting anything about it or creating, you know, anger or resentment towards it. I mean, and, you know, tweeting like the fifth grader that he is. I think these guys have all the right to protest in that manner. And that's just my two cents.
Ken, I appreciate you calling. I guess to that I would say this. Listen, this is a divisive topic. There is no scenario where I could say something right now that 100% of you are going to agree with. What I'm about to say, some of you are going to agree with. I think Ken will agree with it. and the rest of you won't. And if we haven't figured that out about this topic yet, then, you know, we're not paying attention. Here's the truth. The most frustrating part about the president's position on this and the way he sparks the debate or breathes new life into the debate via Twitter whenever he feels like catering to his base or exciting his base is that, and this has really happened from the jump, not just with the president, by the way, but with all sorts of people, he mischaracterizes what's happening. In what I believe is must be an intellectually dishonest way, specifically with the tweets this morning, where he says some of the players don't even know what they're protesting or why they're protesting. That's just not true. The players have actually, anytime asked to speak on it, have actually explained their position and why they're doing what they're doing so clearly and in such a focused manner that it is impossible at this point, unless you are an idiot or you're just refusing to listen for whatever reason, it is impossible at this point to not understand why they're doing what they're doing. You can still disagree with it if you want, but to act like you don't know why they're protesting or to act like they're protesting veterans or the flag, or the United States in general, that's intellectually dishonest. It's there for any Google search. The players absolutely know why they're protesting. And the owners, I do think, are in a self-inflicted, impossible position right now because there's no good way out of this for them. It seems pretty clear the president's not going to let up on this topic. And every time he tweets, it becomes a huge national headline again because he's the president of the United States. We've never experienced anything like this. President Obama or any other president, I don't think would be waking up on Friday mornings tweeting about what NFL players are doing. And I don't mean just President Obama because he's a Democrat. President Bush, either Bush, Ronald Reagan. I don't think they would tackle, for lack of a better verb, this topic the way that this president has tackled this topic for whatever reason. I'll let you decide what the reason is. I think it helps him politically with his base. That's an obvious reason, but whatever other reasons, I'll let you figure out. But it seems pretty clear either way, he's not letting up. And the owners tried to cater to him and put a rule in place that would basically be an attempt to eliminate kneeling during the national anthem. But what they put in place wasn't good enough for him, so he didn't let up. Catering to him didn't work. And the only thing he'll be satisfied with, according to his own tweets, the only way he'll ever leave this alone, and that's assuming that he'll ever leave this alone, is if the owners put in a rule that is mandatory, you stand hand with your over your heart for the national anthem, and if you don't, you are suspended without pay. That's what the president tweeted. Well, the owners can't go there because this is already such a hot-button issue with the players that you'll lose your players because there will be players who take a stand, if only because they're not going to be talked down. At this point, and you heard it last night from player after player after player, they feel they have to take a knee now or have to raise a fist now because otherwise it's interpreted as you guys get back in line. No, we're going to stand up for what we believe in. And now it's a stare down. And if the owners try to push even further in that direction to make the president cool out, it's just going to get more difficult and more difficult and more difficult for them to ever make this not a constant topic of conversation in the NFL. The truth is, what they should have done a long time ago is supported their players' rights to do what they're doing, tried to clarify the message for the fans who didn't want to hear it from the players, and then just shut up, ignore it, and it might not have gone away, but there wouldn't be anything new to say about it. It's incredible to me so many people don't remember the first year of Colin Kaepernick doing this. After a while, it almost became a non-story. There was nothing new to say. He took a knee again during the national anthem. There's nothing new to say. But then owners started popping up about it. Owners starting requesting that their players not do it. The president jumped in. Now there's always new stuff to say. So it's always a topic of conversation. The NFL is the biggest sport in this country by a magnificent margin. I told you yesterday, last week's Hall of Fame game, 6.77 million television viewers. It's more than anything on television all summer, anything, except for an America's Got Talent episode and the Celebrity Family Feud with Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. Those are the only two things all summer on television that outdrew an exhibition NFL game last Thursday night. Incredible stories from last night. Baker Mayfield, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, Saquon Barkley, Shaquem Griffin. What are we talking about? Anthem protest. Because why? Because the owners tried to push it back the other direction. The players stood up and said, we will not cater to this. The president chimed in, and now they've got this public relations nightmare that is a headline on every major sports website almost every day of the week in the biggest sport in this country. There's no good way out now, but like I said in the opening segment, at this point, the owner's only way out is ignore the president or stand up for your players. Because if you try to cater to the president, you have to go all the way with him. And if you go all the way with him, you got an even bigger mess than you do.
Live from Memphis, Tennessee, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
I am Gary Parrish, columnist, television analyst, CBS Sports, filling in for Jim Rome again today. Honored to be here. You can reach me on Twitter at Gary Parrish CBS. And it's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or you could tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Then be listening later on in the show. I might answer your question. And think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. College football news. Pete Futek is going to join me in the next segment right at 1 o'clock Eastern. Talk college football with him. Get an update on Ohio State. But right now, I'm joined by my friend and colleague from CBS Sports, Kyle Porter, live from Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. Kyle, it's Gary. Thanks for being here, man.
No problem. I just got done with a few laps in the Belle Reve swimming pool here, so I'm good to go for the afternoon.
That is, I guess that's the benefit of Tiger teeing off late. If you're a golf reporter, you can kind of like relax in the morning, right?
Yeah, no, it is interesting because everything, even when you're on the property, feels like it revolves around Tiger, even though he's not in the lead, he's not really that close to it, and yet the whole day just sort of revolves around him as kind of the epicenter, and that's a microcosm for golf as a whole, but it is true of these major championship rounds as well.
And it's an interesting scenario because I was hosting Time to Shine on CBS Sports Network a few weeks ago with Evan Washburn, and we were discussing Tiger because I think it was in advance of maybe the U.S. Open or something. And you know, I mentioned that, like, there's still nothing bigger, certainly in golf, but I would argue actual sports in the United States of America, in Tiger Woods with the lead on a Sunday. And Evan's position was, then, like, let's worry about it when we get there. But, like, let's stop spending every minute of every major week talking about Tiger, because he's rarely ends up being the story. And my counter to that was, he's always the story no matter what. Like, if you watch this weekend, the television ratings, if Tiger's involved, will be one thing. If he's not, there'll be something quite different. I imagine you recognize this just with page views. Stories about Tiger Woods, I'm assuming, do way better than stories about anything else.
Yeah, they do. And that's both a blessing and a curse because it's great for business. It does get – you sometimes get tired of covering every single thing that he does. But you're right. he's sort of the context by which we view everything else. If you look at the Open, which we were talking about, Francesco Molinari winning the Open at Carnoustie and beating Tiger Woods is a much bigger deal than if Francesco Molinari wins the Open and beats, Kevin Kisner, Hideki sure. Matsuyama, even Dustin Johnson. It's just, he's the context by which we see everything historically, as well as in the current view, if he's in contention.
Talking to Cal Porter from CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Cal Porter CBS. He's at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. Second round PGA Championship. It's going on right now. Tiger Woods tees off 2:48 p.m. Eastern. Do the players get tired of it? Constantly having all of the attention on Tiger Woods, constantly having to answer questions about Tiger Woods. Does it irritate them at all?
I don't know if irritate is the right word. I think it gets old, right. Just as it does for – and everybody – but everybody gets it. You know, Ricky Fowler was talking about this in his press conference yesterday because he was asked if he was coming in under the radar. And he's like, well, I don't really think anybody in the top 25 is under the radar. You know, certainly I get a lot of attention. Rory gets attention. And then he said Tiger gets plenty of attention.
Right.
And then he followed it up and said, but, you know, all of that is deserved. And he said it in a very sort of – genuine way, and I think those guys realize that they are really rich because of Tiger Woods, and so it's sort of them answering questions and fielding all this coverage. It's sort of a small payback for what Tiger has done for the game, and I think all of them certainly realize that and understand that that's just part of the deal.
You've obviously been covering the sport for a long time, and I promise we will at some point move away from Tiger Woods, but he's obviously a different player now than he was in previous comebacks. Like, he was leading a major on a Sunday not too long ago. That's vastly different. He hadn't done that in a while. Is he a different guy to be around than you remember early on or you know, last time around? Is he any different? He looks different on the course. Does he act different around the course?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's more compelling. He's more human. You know, it's a very human thing to lead an event. It's a very human thing to lose.
Right.
You know, and we, in the past, we never really think of him as losing. And he talked last week at Bridgestone about how, like, his kids were at the Open and he lost. And he had to explain to them the benefit of losing and the value of going for something and not getting it. That's an incredibly human position to take. And not something that we've really seen out of him in the past, mostly because he didn't really lose when he was in that position. And so, for me, the takeaway there is just that you and I and people who watch golf and follow sports are able to relate to somebody like him way more so than we used to be. Now, is he still worth hundreds of millions of dollars and really good at golf, better than any of us will ever be? Yes, of course, but I think from a human and emotional perspective, he's very different than he was in the past.
He's certainly viewed differently. There was obviously his I was going to say career, but really his life has been a roller coaster. There was a time where he and everything about him seemed perfect. You know, he's got the perfect, like, he's the best golfer we've ever seen. He's got the beautiful wife. He's got the beautiful kids. Like, you know, at least outside of golf circles, you know, people didn't know that there was this other side of Tiger Woods. And then, like, everything goes off the rails. And it's well documented. We don't have to go through it. And, you know, now he's somebody who's, I mean, like, listen, he's had a drug problem that he's had to recover from. He's had times where he can't get out of bed. Clearly his marriage fell apart. He's had other relationships that didn't work out for whatever reason. He's got a bald spot, just like me. You know, trying to compare us or any sort of normal type person to Tiger Woods worth $1 billion, I understand can seem a little silly, but he now has very real flaws that that has forced him to be a different person in the public eye, and I think he has transformed into at least a slightly different person. Maybe it's just part of getting older. Maybe all of us change as we get older. But he seems to, again, from a distance, have changed at least some.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think I always go back to Rory McIlroy was asked about this a couple of years ago, and he's like, I would never want Tiger's life. He has a very strange life. I think people look at him and they're like, oh, he's rich and he's famous and he's really good at sports and all these different things, and it's all these things that I think people aspire to. And then you look at his actual life, like the way he lives day to day, and it's very strange. Like, he can't go out in public. He has to, rent out entire restaurants. I don't know, whatever he does. It's a very different life that I think if people were actually living inside of it, they would think differently about what they're actually aspiring to. So, it's been a weird journey, but I agree with you that I think he's more compelling now at 42 than 32, to be honest, or even 22. He was way better at golf when he was 22 or 32, but just as a compelling figure within sports and within kind of our culture, I think he's far more interesting now than he was in the past.
Talking to Cal Porter from CBS Sports. He's on Twitter at CalPorterCBS. He's live at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis, where the second round PGA Championship is happening right now. Tiger Woods scheduled to tee off 2:48 p.m. Eastern. I'm Gary Parrish filling in for Jim Rome again today. What did you make of Tiger's first round?
Well, I was stunned that he shot 70, to be honest with you. I followed him for the first nine holes, and speaking of me and you, he was hitting it like me and you.
more like me than you. You're pretty good. You shouldn't lump yourself in there with me.
He was way off to the left on his tee shots, on his irons. He was leaving everything short when he should have been long. He was long when he should have been short. It was a very kind of disconcerting first nine from him, given how he's played pretty well so far this year. If you look statistically, I think he's been better than people actually realize. But he was all over the place on the front nine, kept it together, birdied the ninth hole of his day, made two more birdies coming home for the 70. And, that's what he's better at than maybe anybody in history, is turning a 74 into a 70 or turning a 71 into a 68 or something like that. So, he's not out of it. Guys are going really low on Friday. Scores are about two strokes better so far on average today. So he's going to have something pretty low on Friday to really put himself in contention for the weekend.
Right. I'm looking at the leaderboard right now. Kevin Kisner is 6 under through 14. Brooks Koepka, 6 under through 14. Schwartzel, 6 under through 13. So, like, guys are going low. And how much of that is just like, hey, these guys are playing well compared to the course is a little different today than it was yesterday?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about this earlier, and he was talking about how it's really a pin position thing. There's only so many places they can put these pins on these greens. And on Thursday, it seems like they used a lot of the hard ones. And on Friday, I think they're a little bit easier. And it's a very soft course, so you don't – even if you're tucking pins, you can still get to them because these guys hit the ball so high that they can kind of just drop it wherever they want, and they don't have to worry about it rolling out. And I think the scores that you're seeing on Friday that are, one and a half or two strokes easier are a big result of just easier pin placements and guys going right at them.
Talking to Cal Porter from CBS Sports. He's on Twitter at CalPorterCBS, live at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. Second round PGA Championship going on right now. Kevin Kisner, Gary Woodland, both tied at 9 under. They are two shots ahead of everybody else, alone atop the leaderboard. If you're Tiger Woods, like, does what you're watching right now change the way you have to go play when you are teeing off at 2:48 Eastern? Like, if you see the top of the leaderboard is now 9 under, Does it actually change the way you approach the course today?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the entire group that he's playing with, the Tiger, Rory, Justin Thomas group, those guys, here's the thing. Here's the reality about those guys. They don't care if they finish tied for third.
Right.
They don't care if they finish in the top 10. All they care about is winning the tournament. And because of that, and Justin Thomas is one under, Rory and Tiger are even, going in to Friday's round, wow, the lead's going to be at 10 under, 11 under, somewhere around there, which means the winning score on Sunday is going to be, 13, 14, 16, who knows? So you've got a score that you got to get to by Sunday, and you know that you only have 54 holes to get there. So I really do think because of how easy it's playing so far on Friday, it changes the way they think. And they know they have to set a target score 64, 65 just to get in the mix. To give themselves a shot on Sunday, because they didn't. None of those three played that great on Thursday.
And talking to Kyle Porter from CBS Sports. A couple more things, then I'll let you go. Are you of the opinion that Tiger Woods does get another major at some point? Where do you fall on that never-ending debate?
Yeah, I've said all along no major, but that he will win again. So right. I think that he will win a tournament again, but I don't think it'll be a major. And, you know, that has less to do with Tiger's maybe ability than it does with how deep everybody is or how deep the sport is right now. As well as Tiger being 42 years old. This is the thing that we don't talk about, Gary, when we talk about Tiger. We talk about the back injuries. We talk about, you know, how he's swinging, how he's putting, all these different things. He's 42 years old, and guys don't win majors when they're 42. I mean, very rarely does it happen. We saw Phil win a couple years ago, the Open Championship, when he was 43, I think. But it just throughout golf history, it doesn't happen very often. Because it's harder to physically maintain what you used to have. It's harder to mentally maintain what you used to have. And so I think for him, could he win another major? Yeah, we saw that at the Open Championship. And I think he will be in contention at other majors. But I'm just betting on the fact that there's so many guys that are so good. And to do it at age 42, 43, 44 is going to be too difficult a proposition even for Tiger Woods.
Last thing before I let you go, obviously, like I mentioned, Kisner and Woodland tied atop the leaderboard 9-under. Do you have a prediction for who's going to hold the trophy on Sunday?
Well, I've gone back and forth on this. The guy that I said on Thursday night after the first round was Jason Day. He was 3-under after the first round. This course sets up really well for him. He's a guy that loves to hit the ball super high and just kind of drop it in with a wedge or a 9-iron and or an 8-iron on some of these pins. So I'll stick with Jason Day, although I'm intrigued by both Brooks Koepka and Ricky Fowler, who I think will be in it until the end as well.
That is CBS Sports' Cal Porter live from Belrive Country Club in St. Louis covering the PGA Championship. You can read him at CBSSports.com. Watch him on CBS Sports HQ. Follow him on Twitter at Cal Porter CBS. I know how busy you are, man. I really owe you for doing this for me, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Anytime, Gary. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You're the best. That's Kyle Porter from CBS Sports. I understand, and I asked Kyle, like, do the other players get irritated by it? And he said, not irritated by it, but they do get tired of it. All of the attention that is paid to Tiger Woods every time he's at a golf course, regardless of whether he's in contention, regardless of whether it's been years since he's won. But that is just that's the nature of the deal. He is the biggest thing in this sport still by a wider margin than anybody is in any other sport, certainly in this country and perhaps in the world. It is still Tiger Woods is the needle mover. There's really not another one. I mean, there's brilliant young golfers, Jordan Spieth to Ricky Fowler to Jason Day to Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, brilliant young golfers. They don't move the needle the way Tiger Woods moves the needle. You go back to that Open Championship a few weeks ago. There was the moment where Tiger takes the lead on Sunday of a major, and it felt like if you were even a sports fan a little bit, not even a golf fan, just a sports fan, it was like whatever you had planned for your Sunday, whether it's go to church, go to lunch with the family, jump in the pool, get some yard work done, that stuff had to be put on hold because Tiger Woods is in contention at a major. There aren't many other things that can happen in sports that will make you alter your plans. But Tiger Woods being in contention on that Sunday in that major is the thing that made literally millions of people change their plans, at least temporarily. And that's why I forever hope all four majors every year that he finds himself one way or another in contention. It's a great sports moment. And if he ever does hold another major trophy, it would be an incredible, incredible achievement. Up next, college football news. Pete Futak going to join me. I'll ask him for the latest on Ohio State. I'm Gary Parrish filling in for Jim Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.